So, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma, Jai Bhim. So, over the last 2 days, we've been looking at the way in which our order and movement work. Probably when you were all ordained, these principles would have been discussed with you. I don't think that what we're talking about is anything new. But we just need to discuss these things again and again because circumstances are always changing. And we need to understand and have a common understanding of the working principles of our order and movement. So that's the discussion that we've been trying to engage in over these days. And of course, we're not going to be able to conclude that discussion this meeting. But I hope that everybody will continue to think and talk. Personally, I think it's very important indeed that we understand what it is that we're doing. And that we have as much as possible a common understanding. But that means we have to talk, we have to discuss. We have to even be prepared to disagree. Out of disagreement comes a new and deeper understanding. So we're trying to set that discussion going. We're also discussing some of the responsibilities that have previously been held by the Preceptors' College. And we're seeing how best those can be carried out in the future. So yes, I realise that we've not got enough time now, but I hope this is the start of a discussion. And we come today to discussing the way the Preceptors' College works. In this month's English Shabda, we've announced some changes. We're changing the way in which we work, and we're trying to expand the college to include new members. In fact, we're proposing to double the size of the college in the next few months. And over the coming years, we hope to increase it a great deal more. And we're asking you to help us in the selection of public preceptors. So that's what I'm going to tell you about this morning. And that's what I'd like you to discuss today. So let's start with the principles that underlie the college as I understand it. Can I ask you to bring this over here? Possible even a bit behind. Further. Bus. Thank you. Everybody can see it? Yes? Okay. It's not going to be very important, but just a little bit of a visual aid. Well, you remember that we talked about the two forces that are present within our order and movement. Those are the arms of Avalokiteshvara. I'm not going to try to draw them all in, you have to imagine them. So the arms of Avalokiteshvara reach out into the world. So that you're somewhere in there. And you're acting in the world. So there's an outward going tendency. And if that outward going tendency isn't balanced, the circle disintegrates and you just get independent movements away. And there has to be an inward going momentum. So, what is that inward-going momentum? Well, ultimately, it's the fact that we all go for refuge to the three jewels. At the center of the image of the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, Avalokiteshvara holds his hands folded at his heart. And between his hands is the Chintamani. What is the Chintamani? The Bodhicitta. What is the Bodhicitta? Well, in Bhante's understanding, it's the altruistic aspect of going for refuge to the three jewels. We're all trying to live out the Bodhisattva ideal. It's implicit in our ordination. You remember at the end of the ordination ceremony, you say, for the benefit of all beings, I accept this ordination. And that indicates the centrality of the altruistic dimension to the act of going for refuge. So the jewel is going for refuge. That's at the heart of our order. That's what brings us all together. That's what balances the outward going activity that we each undertake. The outward going activity that we each undertake. We all acknowledge each other as going for refuge to the three jewels. It's quite interesting. For instance, some of the Dhammacharinis who've just been ordained, I'm seeing for the first time. But I don't doubt that they are effectively going for refuge. I don't have to find out for myself. They've got the case around their neck. And Jnanasuri and Karunamaya and Srimala made sure that Kesa was put there. So that's good enough for me. I trust them. I'm sure that they will have made sure that those they're ordaining are effectively going for refuge. And I'm sure it's the same for some of the ladies. They won't have seen the men who've just been ordained. And it's even more acute where you're considering people being ordained in the West. Well, for instance, presumably most of you have never seen Manjushur before. But you just immediately accept him as going for refuge to the Three Jewels. You accept him as a brother in the Sangha. Well, this is a sort of miracle. Well, you do that because you trust the process whereby they will have been ordained. And this is really the heart of our movement. The fact that we trust each other's ordinations is what unites our order. The day when somebody says, "I don't believe that person is ordained," well, in a way, they cease to be a member of the order. If we don't believe that somebody is effectively going for refuge, it's we who leave the order. The order stays together because we all trust that each of us is validly ordained. When that stops, the order will disintegrate. If at some point people in India say, "Well, I don't believe that people in the West are going for refuge effectively," a split will come. So that the way in which people are ordained is what really gives us our unity. After people are ordained, they're quite free. In the 30 or more years of the order's existence, only a small handful of people have ever been asked to go out of the order. I have counted it up, I can't remember, I think it's something like 6 people. That's all that time. So it's actually quite difficult to be thrown out of the order. That's because we don't have rules. We don't say, "You're not meditating every day, out you go." We don't say, you're believing this teaching, out you go. We believe that everybody who's ordained is trying to go for refuge to the Three Jewels. We believe that everybody who is ordained is effectively going for refuge. We might think that they're going astray a bit. We might think they've got a bit confused. We might disagree with them in certain respects. But we still respect them as individuals who go for refuge to the Three Jewels. And we're able to do that because we accept the validity of the ordination.
और हम ऐसा इसलिए कर सकते हैं क्योंकि दीक्षा की की सार्थकता को उसकी सच्चाई को हम मानते हैं.
So the point of entry into the order is very, very important. And the question surrounding who does ordination, how they do them, and what ordination means are key. And again, we need to have a common understanding of this. And when we cease to have that common understanding, we'll cease to have a common order. So there's been quite a bit of discussion about this over the last months. The public preceptors have deliberately opened this up for discussion. We want to see what different ideas there are. We have our own understanding, which we believe is the one that the order started with. And we want to make sure that most order members at least agree with us in our understanding. So various suggestions have been made. Some people are suggesting we just don't have preceptors. That just a group of 10 order members can ordain collectively anybody they want. Some people have suggested that preceptors should be elected by the order. Some people have suggested that any order member who's been in the order for more than 15 years should be a public preceptor. Somebody even suggested that people should just ordain themselves. You just go up to the shrine and put a case around your neck. Personally, I can see that the value in each of those suggestions. But nonetheless, I feel that none of them will do two things that to me are very important. The first thing is that I don't think any of those alternatives will sufficiently clearly preserve unity. So, for instance, if people just went up and ordained themselves, well, you wouldn't really believe that ordination meant very much. You'd believe it just meant that that person thought they were going for refuge effectively. Or if a group of 10 order members just ordained somebody, well, you couldn't be sure that they would have tested and checked sufficiently. And eventually you begin to feel, well, I don't know whether people are really going for refuge in the same way as me or not. So we just float off into little groups. That's my interpretation of that. And again, there are quite a number of quite senior order members all over the world who I don't believe are yet able to carry that responsibility. They may be very good order members. They may be very good human beings. But they may not be very effective as Kalyana Mitras. They may not have a very clear judgment about other people. So then if they were ordaining people, you couldn't really be confident that people were ready. And all of that would make the order weaker and weaker. One would have less and less confidence in the people being ordained. So I believe these other ways of looking at things don't preserve the need for unity. There's another need that isn't fulfilled for me. I remember so clearly my own ordination. It was now more than 30 years ago. I was ordained in 1973, and more than half my life has been as an order member. But still my ordination is the centre of my life. I remember so clearly going into that private shrine room and seeing Bhante sitting there. I remember what happened when we went through the ceremony. I remember that I was a mixture of both intensely nervous and intensely excited. Excited. And extremely inspired. And I remember that going through the ceremony, well, there were words I'd never heard before. I remember particularly sampapalapavacha. So I remember saying sampapapapapapalacha. But even though all of that was there, it was a very, very strong and moving spiritual experience for me. I felt that something, the most important thing in me, had been recognized by Bhante. In a way I could say, I think he saw something in me that I couldn't really see myself. He touched me so deeply just by witnessing my going for refuge. So it seems to me there's a very important relationship at the heart of ordination. That your relationship with your preceptor is extremely important for your spiritual life. So that means that ordination needs to be carried out by somebody who is capable of calling up that sort of relationship. If you just go and get your kesa from the shrine, that relationship isn't there. If there's just 10 order members, that relationship isn't there. If it's just any order member, the relationship isn't there. You have to have a feeling of respect for that other person. So let's just look a bit more closely at this, because I believe that it's the way in which we presently understand ordination that best fulfills this need. I believe that these other ways of thinking about ordination do not keep us united and don't satisfy this need for recognition by somebody experienced. So this is our understanding of what ordination is. But we understand ordination as the witnessing by somebody who goes for refuge of the going for refuge of another being. Somebody who's been going to refuge deeply for many years sees that you are doing the same thing as them. And there's a sort of resonance between you. You realize that what's in your depths is what's in their depths. What their life is committed to, your life is committed to. And when somebody witnesses you in that way, there's a tremendous affirmation. It's a bit like shining the spotlight on something deep within you. And that means it can grow more fully, more quickly, more strongly. So you need to feel, if you're the person being ordained, that the one who is witnessing you is really able to see that in you. And you need to feel that they are doing more deeply, more fully, what you want to do. So all of this requires, I believe, great maturity and experience on behalf of the public preceptor and the private preceptor. They need to be going for refuge very deeply themselves. They need to be able to see that in another person. They need to be able to relate to them in a very skillful way. This means without status. Heart to heart, human being to human being. There shouldn't be any bossing, any bullying. They should be capable of relating in a positive and skillful way. I personally feel very strongly about this. I think there's such a strong tendency to bossiness. I'm the preceptor, do what I say. And that's not good enough. That there has to be a recognition of the free individuality of all. And I think this is a particularly strong danger here in India. Because this is a more traditional society, a hierarchical society. And a preceptor must be able to break through that. And I think one of the primary requirements for a preceptor is humility. But of course there must also be somebody who other order members trust and respect. Otherwise they won't believe that the ordination is valid. So this understanding of ordination leads we believe, to certain conclusions. It means, first of all, that public preceptors and private preceptors need selecting. They need selecting from senior order members. We believe that they should be selected from those private preceptors, from those who have been ordained for at least 10 years, and public from those ordained at least 15 years. And we need to select those who are really capable of carrying this responsibility. And we believe that those who already carry that responsibility are probably the ones who understand the responsibility best. And they're therefore probably the best people to select new preceptors. However, they're not perfect. And they need to listen to other order members. They need to listen to other order members because they may know things about a candidate which the existing public preceptors don't know. The public preceptors need to listen to other order members because they may know something that the public preceptors don't know. But also the preceptors need the confidence of all order members. The day that order members cease to have confidence in the public preceptors is the day the order ceases to be an order. So the public preceptors need to seek the advice and help of other order members when they are selecting preceptors. So the public preceptors also need to be in good contact with each other. So that they've got a common understanding of what they mean by ordination. So all of that being the case, we've come to certain decisions about how we're going to function from now on. Of course, we're still very much open to comment and suggestion from other order members. But we need to go ahead. There's too much responsibility on too few people's shoulders. So, I'm going to tell you four things that we're going to do in the future. First of all, we're going to expand the college. We're going to try to, first of all, double the size of the college. We put forward, I think it's 13 new public preceptors. And over the course of the next year or two, we want to increase the college by quite a bit more. Potentially, we think that all order members who've been ordained for more than 15 years could be public preceptors. But of course, they need to be able to fulfill the requirements of the responsibility. And we're very happy to enter into dialogue with anybody who's been ordained that time to help them to achieve that. Normally, we'd like people to have been private preceptors for 5 years. Because that means we can see how they work with people. And they can get used to this responsibility. So slowly but steadily, we're going to increase the size of the Preceptors College. And we believe that this will lighten our burden. It'll enable us to decentralize the ordination process. And it'll give more senior order members an opportunity to take a greater spiritual responsibility. So, that's the first thing. We're going to be slowly expanding the college. Then secondly, we're going to be setting up a clearer selection process. First of all, we're going to be selecting people as private preceptors. And after they've been a private preceptor for 5 years, usually, we'll consider them as public preceptors, four public preceptors. It's not that once people have been private preceptors for 5 years, they automatically become a public preceptor. But once you've been a private preceptor for 5 years, we will be able to consider you if it seems appropriate. But we're going to consult the order in general. We're going to be putting into Shabda, both English and Hindi Shabda, those who are proposed as private or public preceptors. And any order member is free to comment. And we will take seriously comments that are made. We will also ask the individual's chapters. We'll ask people who've been ordained by them if they're private preceptors already. Well, if they've already been private preceptors and being considered for public preceptors, we'll ask those they've ordained. And we'll take into consideration what they say. And as I say, what we're particularly keen to see is that people are able to relate in a humble and skillful way. Humble and skillful. And we just don't want any status, no bullying, no bossing. So we'll be listening to the order to see whether anybody has any objections. And we'll also be training people in their functions. On this occasion, we're not putting forward any Indian order members. But we are putting forward one order member who is in India. That's Karunamaya. We're putting forward her as a public preceptor. And again, anybody who's got anything they might think stands in the way, they should tell her, they should tell us. She says she's quite willing to listen to whatever anybody says. Now somebody asked me, well, should Dhammacharis be commenting on Dhammacharinis? Well, of course, if they've got anything to say, it's one order. And Dhammacharinis should be commenting on Dhammacharis if they've got something to say. I think the Dhammacharinis may have something to say about Kumaraji. It's one order. And, well, sometimes women see things about men and men about women that men don't see about men or women about women. So some of you may have to behave very well to your wives in future. And some of you might have to behave very well to your husbands. So perhaps in this way we can improve married life too. But yes, we should all feel free to put our comments. And we will look into what people say and we will engage with them about what they say. And we feel in this way we'll get the best possible candidates. And that the order will have confidence in those we choose. So this is something new that we're going to ask for your help with. Of course, it's going to take us some time to learn how to do this skillfully. But we've already published the notice in the English chapter. And some very helpful comments are coming back. So let's hope that the same thing happens here. So that's my second point. We're going to have a new selection and training process for preceptors in which other order members will have a chance to participate. Then thirdly, we want to break the ordination process up. We want to give many more different opportunities for people to prepare for ordination. And we're going to do this by devolving responsibility to small coolers within the preceptors' college. The preceptors' college will consist of a number of coolers of five or more members. And they will be able to make all decisions about ordination. They can decide how to prepare for ordination. They can decide whether people are ready for ordination. They'll be responsible for consulting with other order members. They'll be responsible for selecting and appointing new private preceptors. And they'll be responsible for carrying out the ordinations. So the preceptors' college will consist of a number of smaller units. That's the college as a whole. And the college will consist of a number of units. So these are the kulas of which the college is made up. And the kulas will be self-governing. In India, there's probably only going to be one kula for the time being. There's Suvadra, Chandrashil and Sudarshan, and there would be, we hope, Karunamaya and Srimala. And they will form, for the time being, a single kula. Of course, they'll operate somewhat independently as regards the men and the women. But they will make the final decisions about all ordinations in India. I don't regard myself as part of the ordination process in India anymore. So, we hope that this will mean there are more different ways of preparing for ordination. You can imagine that eventually there might be many different kulas working in India. And you might feel, well, that kula, they prepare mainly through meditation. That's the way I would like to prepare for ordination. These people are mainly concerned with the Dhamma through social action. Of course, that doesn't exclude meditation at all. But there'll be slightly different flavors to the different processes. And that gives greater variety to the ways in which we can approach ordination. So that's our third point. We want to devolve responsibility to the small kulas. Our fourth point is that we need to try to preserve unity and a sense of common standards within the college. And we're going to do that mainly through having regular meetings of the college as a whole and regionally. And those meetings will talk about matters of common interest. We'll train ourselves in various ways. For instance, at our next meeting in April, we have a Dhammachari who is a psychiatrist. And he's going to talk to us about psychiatric issues and preparing for ordination. We've had a few people who've had nervous breakdowns, mental breakdowns after ordination. Could we be more careful beforehand? Could we help them more afterwards? So we're going to try to learn more about that. And that's just an example of the sort of thing that we're going to meet together to go into. But the main thing we'll do is meditate together and study the Dhamma together. And develop our friendships with each other. So that the college is spiritual vision and deep friendship. And we've got also to consider the organization of the college. We need to find some way of coordinating these different kulas and the college as a whole. I'll tell you briefly about that. So each kula will have one representative. There they are, the representatives. If the kula contains both men and women, there could be two representatives. There's the Indian one. So all of those representatives will belong to a council of kula representatives. A strange shape, but there we are. So that's the council of kula representatives. And that council will come together from time to time to make sure that common standards of ordination are preserved all over the world. It's not a boss council. It's just the representatives of those kulas. And the kulas are independent, autonomous. Then the council as a whole will elect a chairman for a 5-year period. That's me at the moment. At least for the next 2 years. Oh, sorry, 1¾ years. Then I may be free. Okay. And the chairman will be assisted by 3 deputy chairmen. There's at the moment Dhammacharini Dhammadina. There's Dhammachari Padmavajra, and there's Dhammachari Suvajra. And between them, they are responsible for keeping the whole council and the whole college and the council functioning effectively. And just to be quite clear, Bhante has made it clear to us that the chairman of the college can be either a Dhammachari or a Dhammacharini. It's up to the council, to the college, to elect. But we hope that this will mean that we stay united and preserve a common understanding of what ordination is. So it's time for me to leave you to discuss. I realise that even though I've tried to cut down to the absolute minimum, there's a lot to think about. And I imagine there's a lot that you'd like to ask me or that you don't quite understand. Or a lot of things that you think need more thought. Or things that you don't agree with. So I'm very happy this afternoon to answer any questions that you might have to ask. We're trying to work this out, so it's going to be shifting and changing over the next years. So today we've got really three questions. First of all, do you agree with our understanding of ordination and the way it is carried out? And secondly, do you agree with the way in which the college is set up? And thirdly, have you any suggestions for how we might make it all work better? Do you find yourself in agreement with the way we understand ordination? Are you comfortable with the way in which we've set up the college? Have you got any suggestions for how we might make it all work better for the sake of the order? So please feel free to discuss fully and frankly. Your brothers and sisters in the West have a lot of different ideas. So you should feel free to participate in that discussion. And let's hope that together we can develop this wonderful order in our movement more and more effectively. After all, we're doing all this to try and help the world. We see our order as the embodiment of Avalokiteshvara. And we should do anything we think is necessary to make Avalokiteshvara more effective in the world. Thank you.